Welcome everyone to another week at the Damage Report. I'm John Iadarola, and joining me both on the show and in wearing green.
I was gonna say that.
No comments is here. How's it going? Yeah. We're matching.
We
not
are
intentionally.
Matching.
Not intentionally.
I don't know if I believe that.
You think I put this on?
Mm-hmm,
I brought two ties
did.
Into the bathroom.
Uh-huh.
I put on this one.
Uh-huh.
I will never know.
We are the Damage Report version of Destiny's Child. I've already claimed Beyonce.
Yeah, that she.
Just so we're clear.
She said that really fast, though.
Immediately.
There was no time where I could claim it.
So. We have to sneak in random facts.
Okay, what are the random facts? Oh, at the beginning of the show?
At the end, I was
okay,
saying.
You think of a random fact, okay. We will sneak it in. So we've got a lot of other stuff that we're gonna sneak into this episode. Obviously, we're gonna be responding to the summary of the Mueller report in just a little bit. That'll be a first block. A little bit later on the show, we've got an update on the devastation that was wrought across the Midwest and parts of the South by record flooding, doing billions of dollars worth of damage. And then, not totally unrelated to that, a recording of release shows oil executives gleeful at how much access they have to Donald Trump and his administration. We're gonna be breaking that down and the implications going forward, because while the recording is a little bit old, it does have something to say about what's gonna be happening in the next month or so. A little bit later on, a big study on hate crimes and the link between hate crimes and Trump rallies. Fun study we're gonna be breaking down. We also have a great guest who's gonna be joining us later on the show. So Jerry Ashton is a part of RIP Medical Debt. They've canceled hundreds of millions of dollars worth of medical debt, but there's still a long way to go. We're gonna be breaking down how big of a problem medical debt is and some of the ways that individuals can do something about it and also government policies that might help to solve part of the problem. Also, updates on the war, Fox News versus AOC. Who's winning? We're gonna break that down at the close of the show if there is time. But first, we start off with the big news of the weekend. So obviously, over the weekend, the four-page summary letter from William Barr was sent out summarizing his interpretation of what is in the Mueller report. So we're gonna be discussing that. We can only go so far, though, because we don't have the full Mueller report. What we do have is a four-page letter which contains 98 words quoted from the final report that is gonna be well over 1,000 pages long. It's kind of a comically small amount from the final report. In fact, in just a couple of graphics, we're gonna read more than half of all of those words. So, but what I do wanna focus on is not Barr's interpretation necessarily, because he can say whatever he wants. I'm going from the point of view that what he is saying is an accurate reflection of the report.
Right.
But I would like to add another useless caveat. That might not be true. And so if it turns out not to be true, obviously we're gonna have to modify our interpretations. But I'm assuming that Mueller was serious and honest. And oddly, Barr is doing the same, although of course he was put in that position not to be.
Right.
But we will assume that he is. So the most important headline quote from the summary letter is, the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities. Now, it might not matter what sentences come before or after that, but if it does matter, we don't know because we don't have those sentences. But that by itself is very straightforward. It is saying that they did not find clear evidence, actionable evidence of a conspiracy between Trump, members of his campaign, and the Russian government. So we don't have that.
Which is mind blowing for a lot of people, I think.
Uh-huh.
Just kind of following along with this. What? Everything seems so clear.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think for that, for evidence that would actually lead to Mueller saying, oh, by the way, the DOJ should totally take down Trump or whatever, that would require a lot of evidence. And
right.
Apparently it isn't there. Look, it could be that, like some people, the frustration with all of this is that there were maybe like three people in the country who were like, I want to read the summary and then evaluate based on what's there.
Right.
Everybody else was right. It turns out, it's crazy. Everybody was right before. That's weird how that always works out. Everybody is right. But here's the thing. It could be that there's evidence that he didn't find, but I mean, he had almost 2 years. He had tons of lawyers. He had a lot of resources. I would imagine that if he is being honest, and I don't see any reason why Mueller would not have been being honest
for
in
sure.
Prosecuting this, if it was there to be found, he would have found it.
Right.
There are a couple of needless, pointless caveats to that. One, we should acknowledge, is it not insane that in an almost 700-day investigation, he never spoke with Donald Trump? Never interviewed Donald Trump. And we found out at the time, as they were going back and forth in the negotiations, that the Trump team didn't want Trump to talk to Mueller because they couldn't trust him to not lie to Mueller. Lie about what? I don't know, since apparently there was no underlying crime. But they never spoke with the guy who was being investigated. Now, that does not mean that this conclusion is wrong. Again, I'm going with the assumption that it is accurate. But it's really weird to not talk to the guy you're investigating at any point over the course of 2 years.
Right, it was almost like they decided, you know, it's just not worth the trouble. We're not going to find anything from him. I think at worst, he would do something newly illegal, mm-hmm. like lie, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, which is what took down several other members of his administration.
Exactly, but I guess they just decided it's not worth the trouble, like fighting to get him there because he's not going to. Look, we're not going to uncover anything different from all of this information that we have right here. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's a bummer, though, because, I mean.
Yeah. Well, look, what's interesting about this, both that quote and the one that we're going to read next, is it does require reevaluating the meanings of certain words. Because, obviously, look, he's saying no coordination. Now, he does say specifically with members of the Russian government. He doesn't say with people affiliated with the Russian government or anything like that. So hypothetically, there might be something in the report there. But I'm assuming that that's not substantive and won't change the evaluation. I mean, there are still standout things like Don Jr. being connected, being contacted and saying, by the way, the Russian government wants your father to get elected. We want to help you out. And he says, I love it. Let's meet up. And all of the highest ranking members of the campaign meet with this person. Now, it might be that nothing came of that. But that certainly seems like attempted conspiracy, but apparently it doesn't rise to the level.
It's just,
that's what we're finding out.
This has, you know, it's been almost 2 years, and I just think people were expecting this to be very clear and simple. Like, you know, this is what you did, this is what you did. Oh, by the way, second page, your kids are going to prison. Like, I think mm-hmm. people thought this was going to be, like, very clear. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like the way the president has been acting, like, very fearful of this, and if you don't have anything to hide, and you're the president,
look,
you know what I mean? Because the president can get away with a lot of stuff. So if you, especially
we're finding
if you
out.
Don't have anything to hide, you'd be good. You're not going to get railroaded like some small-time crack dealer in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. Like you actually could be good if you have nothing to hide. And he's been acting so scared. So I think a lot of us expected something different than this.
Yeah, or anything. I mean, over 2 years, who knows what to expect.
Right.
But I will say, before we move on to the obstruction, which I find to be much more interesting and the summary to be much more frustrating, let's just briefly play a game.
Okay.
So as I talked about on the Young Turks on Friday, this investigation has been going on for almost 700 days. That's a long time, and a lot has happened during that time. And although Mueller has been very good, apparently, at not leaking much of anything, really, that's not directly going to be acted on in a court, we weren't finding out details. We did find out a lot over the course of 2 years. And imagine if we were to go back to day one, not knowing anything that we know now, and then we go 700 days, nothing's leaked, we find out nothing. And then in the end, the report drops and it says, we've got 37 different indictments. We've got Trump's lawyer goes down, his national security advisor goes down, his campaign manager goes down, virtually every major figure in his inner circle, for some reason, apparently unconnected to any crime, was lying about contacts with Russian nationals or officials in the Russian government. Obviously, a whole long list of people actually working for the Russian government and hackers all get indicted as well. Corporations get indicted, all of that. We find out about the Trump Tower meeting. We find out about Trump Tower Moscow. If we'd found out all about that in the report, that seems like a bombshell. But because it gets dribbed and drabbed over the course of 2 years and every single thing gets dissected and then normalized and suddenly, no matter how bad the quotes seem, we just move on, doesn't really matter anymore. If all of that came out at once, it would seem absolutely massive. And on day one, never could have predicted that all that would happen, that virtually every one of his cronies and toadies would go down other than members of his family. But it comes out over the course of 2 years, and so it seems like, no conspiracy.
That's such a good point,
I try to make good points.
Because
on the
now he gets to say, like, all of these people, you know, every time something happened, something new happened, this was a bad egg, this was a bad egg, and then you're forgetting that there's been 5,000 bad eggs.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it just at the end, he gets to say, but I didn't do anything.
Yeah. And so you're left in this weird position where can Donald Trump and his supporters say that this is a good result in the end? Yes, I think they can.
Absolutely.
Partially because of the way it went down. But imagine Obama saying, I am victorious after so many of the people who worked for me, my personal lawyer, my national security advisor, campaign manager, all of that going down for multiple felonies. Would anyone say Obama was a winner he dodged a bullet there? I don't think so.
It would be
the weird expectations game works out for Trump here.
Right. I mean, somehow the Senate would have had Obama on house arrest in handcuffs this for the 2 years.
Probably.
Somehow.
Yeah.
There would have been some sort of punishment before the report even came out. There's no way any of this
would have
happened.
He would have never gotten a single Supreme Court nominee, let alone not just the last one. Okay, so let's move on to the other thing. So aside from conspiracy, collusion, whatever you want to say, what about obstruction? Which is the part of this case that was much more visible, of course. No one watching this over the course of 2 years knows anything in particular about possible contacts. But we can see what he's doing behind the scenes or in plain view when it comes to obstruction. So in the summary letter, this is again a quote. This is actual words from the final report. This is not just William Barr. While this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him. Which is important for a couple of reasons. One, that provides enough wiggle room that, as I said earlier, everybody gets to say that they were right. Because it doesn't say that he committed a crime, but it also doesn't say that he doesn't commit a crime. And in the end, he won't go down for a crime, so that's a good day for Donald Trump. But it also lets virtually everyone say that they were right to some extent.
But it feels like we are reaching, but we're not. Because when we're talking about the president, a 22-month investigation should come out and absolutely say the president was exonerated.
Yeah,
we're talking about the president of the United States. You would hope, right? That's what one would hope.
Yeah. So what I just want to focus on the word exonerate. It's my favorite word in this whole thing. The reason being that again, there's only 98 words of quotes from the final report, and it also does not exonerate him. Is a few of them. It's very specific, and yet I could not tell you how many people, either in the Trump team or just Trump defenders or just members of the media, that specifically said it exonerated him.
But
All it says is that it didn't exonerate him. So maybe I'm taking crazy pills, I don't know. But everybody, like Trump tweeted, exonerates me. Sarah Huckabee Sanders exonerates me. Random NBC News reporter, turns out it exonerates him. It's the only thing it didn't do.
Right.
Now it did say no conspiracy. So good, report that. That's great news for Donald Trump, and it's apparently true. But it specifically on obstruction of justice does not exonerate him. We're gonna go over. The reason, so here's the frustrating thing about it. If it turns out, as it did, that he didn't have any sort of direct deal or anything like that, okay, fine. Along the way, none of us could have said whether that was true or not. But with obstruction, I mean, we've been paying attention. We've seen it. Here's the thing. Going forward, what does obstruction mean? Mm-hmm. Can a president go down for obstruction? It previously led to the impeachment or removal of a president. But now, what doesn't rise to the level of obstruction? Well, you can fire the head of the FBI. Because he wouldn't shut down an investigation for you. You can go on TV and say that's why you did it. You can tamper with witnesses publicly on social media any number of times. You can float pardons constantly. You can attack the integrity of the investigation constantly, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. You could rally all of your supporters in media to do the exact same thing and then boost those people in the media. You can do all of that, and that's not obstruction of justice. So I ask you, and like I understand some people are angry that we're even talking about this. What is obstruction of justice? Would Donald Trump have to red wedding Robert Mueller and all of his investigators for it to rise to the level? If that's not obstruction of justice, then we're done with obstruction of justice. It will never apply to a president again. And presidents in the future, by the way, because I'm very worried about the implications going forward of a couple of aspects of this. This will result in more tampering by presidents in investigations of them.
Absolutely, this is 100%
it will.
Absolutely.
And by the way, maybe that'll be a Democrat, maybe it'll be a Republican. But in the future, if they engage in illegal acts in office, if they engage in corrupt acts in office, and if they get investigated, as surely future ones will, why don't they just shut it down? Why don't they just fire people? Why don't they just attack them publicly? Why don't they just do whatever they want? Because there's definitely not gonna be a charge of obstruction of justice. That should be disheartening for anyone who wants the powerful, rich, and connected to have any sort of consequences for what they do.
Right, I agree.
And so that's frustrating. There's more that I wish we could get to.
We unfortunately
don't have.
Okay.
I don't want to focus too much on this. I want to just briefly mention. I do think it's funny that we had this period where everybody who was taking seriously the investigation was being tarred as, "Look at you! You love the FBI. Why do you trust the FBI so much?" So now the report comes out, and they're like, "The FBI proves I was right all along." So that's kind of funny. Also. So the Mueller probe had been fake all along. We know that the Trump defenders were saying that. The probe exonerates Trump, So it wasn't fake anymore. It was totally right. And all those attacks against Mueller, those don't count anymore. He was actually awesome. Oh, but also ignore the stuff about the hacking that was done during the election, because it's also very specific about that. And all the people who are like celebratory about this, Sean Hannity and Don Jr. are so happy about this. They still don't admit that that hacking actually happened, even though it's incredibly specific about how it was done. So there's a lot of fun stuff coming out of this. Again, we know almost nothing from the final report, so we can't actually talk about it too much more in depth. Eventually, perhaps we'll have the report and then we can go more in depth on a variety of different topics. Right. With that though, we do have to turn to other matters. So we're gonna take a short break. We come back, the environment. It's a disaster after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
So you've probably seen by now that the Midwest, parts of the South, gigantic portions of the country are inundated with flooding of, some would describe as, biblical proportions. The human toll, I mean, it's true, tremendous. I don't know how to use the terminology because I'm the most secular person in the country, but it is insane. The human toll, the financial toll, the environmental toll. I saw footage of cars driving along a highway. It looked like the Keys or something, because as far as you could see, off of the highway was just water. And I do want to briefly mention some of the numbers associated with this. I understand that that's not the sexiest thing, but to give people an idea of how devastating these extreme weather events are in terms of financial costs, let alone all of the other areas where they're devastating, these numbers are absolutely insane. Iowa's governor Kim Reynolds said on Friday that recent flooding had caused, at that point, $1.6 billion in damage, pushing the total costs across the region to more than $3 billion.
That's wild.
I mean, and that's from flooding that like, and people are going to forget about it.
Flooding that's ongoing. Like,
other parts of the country, they're already, exactly. Those numbers are from Friday. Right. I mean, God only knows now. I've been looking for the most updated numbers, but I haven't seen it. Now, some other numbers. It's destroyed more than 1,200 homes in Iowa, damaged tens of thousands of homes in multiple states, not surprisingly. Destroyed vast swaths of agricultural land in Nebraska, Iowa, and Missouri. Caused more than $480 million in damage to homes. I mean, think about how many people's lives have been ruined by that. Right. $300 million in damage to businesses, $214 million in damage to agriculture, replacing 70 miles of levees that the Army Corps of Engineers used will cost $350 million. Replacing 175 miles of levees used for agricultural reasons, $175 million. Wow. I mean, these are gigantic numbers. And so, I don't want to stress to too great of an extent any particular extreme weather event, the connection between that and climate change. Because
people get confused about what climate
exactly
means, right?
And as people have pointed out, these places have flooded before and they will flood again. But we know that in cases like this, the sheer amount of precipitation can be really important, and that is connected with climate change. Both drought and flooding, heat and cold are both connected with climate change. And so when you see numbers like this, like, I wish a reporter would ask, how are you going to pay for not taking this seriously? How are you going to pay for not doing anything about this? I mean, this flood that many people have had the luxury of being able to ignore in other parts of the country. Billions of dollars of damage. That's one flood. One fire might be hundreds of millions. You know, one storm might be billions. But we're going to experience many of all of those every single year from now on, getting worse every single year, becoming more common every single year, with the costs rising every single year. So to those who don't want to pursue something like the Green New Deal, who don't want to take this threat seriously, how are you going to pay for your inaction?
And you know, and it's fascinating that like there's the plan would just be, oh, we're just going to secure emergency funding. We're just going to give them emergency funding every time something like this happens to deal with a disaster every single time.
Yeah.
Unless it's in New Orleans, but then
Puerto Rico, right?
Every single time something like this happens, we'll just pay billions of dollars in federal emergency funding.
Exactly.
When we could just do what we could to take care of this ahead of time.
Yeah, rather than relying on the Senate to vote the right way every single time.
Right, so
because we know that sometimes they don't.
Get to a point to where we don't have the money to pay for the type of disasters that we're going to be talking about.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, I want to briefly mention another disaster, Cyclone Idai that we talked about last week. Mm-hmm. I saw that, and again, these are probably a couple of days outdated numbers, more than 750 people have died as a result of that cyclone. And there are large areas, again, that are still flooded. Far inland. I mean, we talked briefly about the inland ocean that was created, 30 miles across, an ocean where no ocean had been. We're gonna take it seriously eventually, perhaps too late. We're gonna go a little bit over because I do wanna mention this. So a recording has come out of an industry meeting of oil executives back in June of 2017. And it's very interesting how happy these people were about the access that they had already gotten to Donald Trump and his administration. Remember, this is June 2017. This is just a few months into the administration. But already they were gleeful at the amount of access that they had. And so here's, Politico did write about it. I'm not the biggest fan of Politico, but in this particular case, I do like what they've been able to reveal. So the previous 8 years before then for the industry had been kind of bad. The Obama administration, from their point of view, and environmental groups had put together a quote target list of everything that they wanted done to shut down the oil and gas industry. But now, not so much. Now they had access. And so Barry Russell, this is the IPAA CEO, said, it's really a new thing for us. For example, next week I'm invited to the White House to talk about tax code. Last week we were talking to Secretary Pruitt. In about 2 weeks, we have a meeting with Secretary Zinke. So we have unprecedented access to people that are in positions who are trying to help us, which is great. And so at that time, actually, at that meeting, they distributed a private regulatory update memo that had their wish list of things that they wanted to achieve. Now, that was back in 2017, and so we get to see, how did they do? And it turns out that they got 4 of their 5 high-profile issues. Things like rescinding fracking rules meant to control water pollution, withdrawing rules that limit climate change causing methane gas release, abandoning environmental restoration of public land damaged by oil development, and ending long-standing protections for migratory birds. Remember, every year, millions of birds are killed due to fossil fuel industries. That's when there were regulations, by the way. Now, it will be far higher, of course.
But just even, I don't know, can we bring that back up? Just that breakdown that you just had up there. The things that, these are all basically, essentially for business decisions. Mm-hmm. So all of the things at the end of every bullet, like help the earth. Those are good things that deserve protections. And they got to just mark that out for business decisions.
Exactly. And some of these were so hard fought, like actually taking methane release seriously. Like that happened years and years into Obama's administration. But it is extremely important because it's far worse for the climate than carbon. It's like 88 times worse. But we got that rule. Now, Obama was not blameless on the environment. He did not go far enough in some directions. But, you know, subsidies for electric vehicles, subsidies for alternative fuels, methane restrictions, new restrictions on fracking, not eliminating or anything, but new restrictions. And then Trump gets in office.
Right.
And you can say goodbye to all of that.
Right.
And many others that we've done roundups of before on the damage report. And so that's devastating. More devastating, though, is possibly what's coming. So at the time, one of the reasons they were so gleeful, this is back in 2017, is that David Bernhardt, their former lawyer, had been appointed by Donald Trump to the number 2 position at the Department of the Interior. And once this guy was in there, he pushed their agenda. Now, he wasn't in charge or anything, but he was there. He was able to get the meetings and all of that. Now, he's the nominee to take over that entire department. So they'll have even more access. And by the way, seems kind of relevant, but that guy, David Bernhardt, who might be the next Secretary of the Interior, Him and his former lobbying firm have donated almost $1 million to senators since 2013. The exact senators who will be voting on whether he gets to take over the Department of the Interior. So on top of the environmental destruction, you also have a gigantic dose of corruption of the more traditional sort.
Always got to have a little sprinkling of that.
Exactly, exactly. Again, maybe like with what we were talking about the last story, maybe we'll take it seriously at some point.
Yeah.
Maybe when it's too late. Okay, we are going to take a short break. We come back, hate crimes, they're becoming more common. And someone's identified one of the potential sources for that after this. And we're back, so much more to get to. Stick around in just a little bit. We're going to have a guest on to talk about the extreme plight, especially of veterans' medical debt and what can be done to actually reduce it. But before that, Brooke.
Yes. All right. So the Washington Post researchers wanted to take a look at a potential correlation between Trump's rhetoric and hate crimes. And I think that's something a lot of people want to look at. And they looked at it officially. They actually used the Anti-Defamation League's hate, extremism, anti-Semitism, and terrorism map to look at this specifically. And what did they find? Well, they found that Trump's rhetoric indeed may encourage hate crimes. Specifically, they found counties that had hosted a 2016 Trump campaign rally saw a 226% increase in reported hate crimes over comparable counties that did not host such a rally. And now they're acknowledging that their analysis can't be certain. It was Trump's campaign rally rhetoric that actually caused the increase in hate crimes. But they did point out that blaming fake hate crimes is unrealistic because not only is that charge frequently used as a political tool to dismiss concerns about hate crimes, but research shows it's far more likely that hate crime statistics are considerably lower because of underreporting. And additionally, it is hard to discount a Trump effect when a considerable number of these reported hate crimes reference Trump. And that's something we talk about all the time here. Even more so, Vox pointed out, you know, Trump doesn't help by not taking a strong stance against white nationalism. Look at his responses to the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, the shooting there in New Zealand's recent terror attack, and of course, in Charlottesville, his response when neo-Nazis and white supremacists marched shouting hate-filled remarks like Jews will not replace us, they were giving Nazi salutes, he said there's blame on both sides.
Yeah, yeah. So in, to this extent, the response is always, well, how responsible can he be? He didn't do it. And I always think of what Andrew Gillum said in one of the debates in Florida.
Okay.
Where he was like to Andrew Gillum, well, I'm not saying that you're racist, but the racists certainly seem to think you're racist.
Right.
Well, these people are doing the hate crimes. I mean, I can't say that you hate these people, but they sure seem to think that you do, and they do, and they love that you do. And then they go out and they do something about it. And so again, one study by itself isn't proof of anything necessarily, but I mean, they've done, it's a relatively sophisticated analysis. They showed a strong effect. They compared it to other counties. I mean, unless you always have to check to see which direction the causal arrow is going in. Maybe he's going to cities that had more hate crimes. That doesn't really make sense to me. It's hypothetically an explanation.
It's super simple. Why do they keep saying they're doing it in your honor, in your name? And then why aren't you furious at all of these evil people, and why are you screaming? Stop saying my name! I don't believe in this.
Well, and one of the things that frustrates me the most is that it's been well established that there is nothing Donald Trump can say or do that is going to cut severely into his base's support for him.
Right.
Which I would have to assume includes taking this seriously and saying something about it. Like at this point, he's not going to lose his base if he says, "Hey, by the way, racism is stupid." Like, just acknowledge that white nationalism, white supremacy are stupid self-defeating ideologies. Say that. Say, hey, maybe we shouldn't attack people that we don't share the same faith with or the same skin color with. But he doesn't want to do that because even though it wouldn't hurt him, he's getting something out of his silence.
And not even, I think, even, yes, not, I don't want to say not even that, but also
the fact that I'm wrong a lot.
No, because I'm agreeing with you, but I think that you're right. He can say anything. It's like the Kardashians. The money is not going to stop. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't have to keep lying about plastic surgery. The brand is strong.
Yeah.
People don't care. His fans don't care.
Yeah.
But this is the one thing that actually created the base. This is why they are his fans.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't know if they'll care, because then they could just easily be like, well, he's just saying that because he has to.
Yeah, I think
we
that
have
they would
to
cover.
Go back into hiding a little bit. But
yeah, cults of personality are strong in a number of different ways.
This is what created the base. This is the base. This is what makes up the base. This one thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so
while we can't, I mean,
you can't break, you know, like tear down the house you live in.
Mm-hmm.
You could say a lot of other things.
I just wish that people would take it seriously, because it has become so common to just say, oh, they're faked. Oh, they're not actually hate crimes, or hate crimes aren't actually a thing. It's the same as with accusations of sexual harassment and sexual assault.
It doesn't matter how much we learn.
It's not real. Because it would be inconvenient to me and uncomfortable to assume it's real. So it's probably not real. People are probably exaggerating and making it up.
That reminded me of this. Just breaking that down reminded me of sexual assault. And how it's talked about, like, in society. Like, oh, people are lying, when really it is more, like, so many victims never report.
Yeah, and they even point out in this, it is far more likely, actually, that this is an undercounting.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily that the effect would be different, but that the sheer number of hate crimes is more than likely higher than it seems to be in this analysis. Okay, with that, we do have to take a break. When we come back, lots more to get to. While medical debt is an undeniable problem to the families burdened by it, the sheer size of the problem nationally is not something that we talk about too much. And joining us now to help do that is Jerry Ashton, co-founder of RIP Medical Debt. Jerry, welcome to the show.
I'm very pleased to be here. Thank you.
We're glad to have you here to help break down this problem. So before we dive into the numbers, your organization, what are they about?
Well, if you take a look at a book that we just published called End Medical Debt. If you notice, there's $1 trillion worth of unpaid medical debt right now hanging on the backs and minds of our fellow Americans. So $1 trillion is a good place to start.
That is a gigantic number, obviously. Yeah. And I'm assuming that veterans probably make up quite a bit of that number. Can you just describe for people who might be blessedly free of that sort of debt, having these gigantic sums of medical debt, what sort of effects does that have on individuals and families?
Well, you got kind of two questions there. One is, what about veterans? And then what about the rest of us? And what does it really mean? I'm a Navy veteran myself. I was a Navy photojournalist. And my job at that time was to introduce the work that Navy people did around the world. Today, I end up finding out that my fellow veterans for many, many years and many more years to come are actually burdened by unpaid and unpayable medical debt by the VA.
Yeah.
And this is what's called emergent care. Emergent care is emergency services such as showing up at a local hospital because you have a heart problem, or you're taken by an ambulance and instead of the ambulance taking you to the VA, they take you to a hospital, and guess who has to pay that hospital bill?
Yeah.
There's $6 billion worth of medical debt owed by veterans right now.
People who put their lives on the line.
Exactly, after years of service, possibly incurring some of these medical problems from the service to their country. And so I did not serve. And so perhaps a lot people like me might believe, well, aren't they all, they're taken care of. They've got something like the VA. And so I assume to some extent, your organization needs to not just try to solve the problem, but educate people about the fact that for some of these communities, they're not being fully taken care of by the government.
Well, this is so important, the word education. Most of us are blissfully, or I should say unblissfully aware of the chain of pain that is caused by what we call a healthcare system here in America. When you consider that we're the only industrial nation that does not take care of its citizens, when you realize that healthcare for all is really healthcare for those who can afford it, and devil kiss the hindmost. So we have a tattered system. We have a system of for-profit, which runs from insurance companies, through hospitals, through pharmacy, through anybody who touches a patient on their journey, hopefully back to health. And it's all caused by a system which has to be changed. So speaking of veterans, my title for the chapter on veterans was called No Thank You for Your Service.
Wow.
Yeah. So let's talk about the book then. Let's try to figure out how this problem could actually be solved. Obviously, you've got multiple perspectives there, experts coming from different points of view. What are some of the policies that you think the government could pursue that would be most likely to make an appreciable difference in dealing with this debt?
Well, one thing is stop doing what we're doing. That's a pretty good start.
That's and true for everything, I think.
So we're just digging the hole deeper, and to think that our legislators and our congressmen and women are actually working for us as opposed to lobbyists is part of the disillusionment I'd like to bring to everybody. Mm-hmm. Wake up. We need to wake up to the fact that there's a real problem out there. It's not going to be fixed by jury rigging the present system that we have. So it's really going to take a lot of brave people. In our book, there are three authors. There's myself, Jerry Ashton, there's Craig Antico, my partner in the debt collection industry, and there's Robert Goff, who is the former executive director of the NYU Physicians Association. All three of us have a different point of view about healthcare and how it should be delivered and how it should be paid for. But all three of us agree on this thing, the thing I would like to have all of your listeners agree to and your viewing audience. We've got to stop putting people in debt because they got sick or injured.
Jerry, I have a question because I do know the VA does offer the medical care hardship program. And when looking into this, it seems there are a lot of problems with that too. I want you to talk about that a little if you could, because forgiven debt, is it true like that could then be counted as income on taxes for these vets, which then creates another problem if you already can't afford it to begin with?
Good question. Here's how this works. As a charity, we're a 501c3, ripmedicaldebt.org. And as a charity, we are allowed to be able to forgive someone's debt with no tax consequences to the recipient. Whereas if you were a hospital, mm-hmm. or if you were a doctor, or if you were a debt buyer, you could not liberate that debt. You couldn't forgive it because you would be required, as a profitable organization, you would be required to file a 1099-C, which would put people in risk of being chased by the best bill collectors of all, and that's the IRS.
So I also want to mention, we're short on time, but I want to give credit to your organization that you have purchased and forgiven over $500 million in unpaid debt, which I can't believe it's taking me this far into the interview to acknowledge, because if I had done that, or 1/100th of that, that's how I would introduce myself when I meet someone. I'm Johnny Rowland, I've forgiven over $500 million of medical debt. So congratulations for your organization's success in that. And I definitely want to recommend to our audience that they take a look at the book, different perspectives on how we could possibly make a difference in this area. And so Jerry Ashton of RIP Medical Debt, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
We're going to take a short break. We come back just a little bit more time. Don't go anywhere. Breaking news, Michael Avenatti might be going down big time. This is just coming out as we've been filming, but he has been charged with attempting to extort Nike from $20 million, $20 million. And so we've got just the initial details of this. It's literally breaking on Twitter right now. According to a charging document from the Southern District of New York, which has been busy lately, yeah, Avenatti attempted to extract the money by, quote, threatening to use his ability to garner publicity to inflict substantial financial and reputational harm on the company if his demands were not met. Specifically, he said that he was going to have a press conference alleging misconduct to get all of this money. More charges might be forthcoming. He already has some legal issues. So look, again, we don't know the merits of this. I'm assuming they have a strong paper trail if they're willing to allege this. But you gotta respect the balls on someone who tries to take $20 million from Nike.
Right. This just makes me feel bad for Stormy Daniels. And it all goes back to, like, you know, you've got like half the country, not even half, not, but you know, the loudest part, at least these days, of the country just bashing this woman forever. And now her lawyer repeatedly is in like scammer type trouble. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't make her look good, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't know. It's just like, ugh.
Yeah, and I think, look, that's all tied in with the fact that the ridiculous stigma around any form of sex work continues to this day, continues not just in conservatives. Like, there are lots of people who identify as being either centrist or on the left who still little bit of weird views about mm-hmm. people who do that. Why do they do that? They're inherently a little bit more suspect. And so it becomes more difficult to even get legal representation.
Right.
And maybe makes you more susceptible to ending up with someone who might be a bit of a sleazeball. Again, I don't know the content of the charges or whatever, but I can say, sort of zooming out from this particular thing about Michael Avenatti, what is wrong with our society?
What is wrong with our society?
So my thing, I was talking about this in one of the breaks, it is very difficult to identify people that have achieved significant followings online in the last few years without being hot garbage.
Yes.
AOC, the Parkland kids, Chrissy Teigen.
Maybe Jamila Jamil.
That's it, really. Maybe there's some more, maybe you can think of some, but otherwise, people just want trolls and a-holes and liars and grandstanders and people who push nothing but themselves. I mean, Scaramucci is a thing. When I say that name, you know who I mean. That's an indictment of America right there.
Right.
And Avenatti's another one. Why do they have such weird names? Why can't I be one of those? Iderola, man, he's an a-hole. Nope, I don't push myself enough.
I'm sure people say that.
Yeah, probably.
Not for like logic, but them
anyway,
sure people say
it's just
say that.
Like, he's super famous and probably super wealthy. Maybe not at the end of this. He might be in jail and he might have to give up all of his money or whatever. But yeah, like he was able to really ride those waves, man.
And it's weird because like I guess I'm not one to say what if you get a platform and you run for it and are able to make some money from it. It's hard for me to be mad at that about anybody. Like people complain about. Just, you know, people involved with like Black Lives Matter and some of them have been able to like become famous and make money from that. And I don't hate that at all.
Who would?
Right. So I'm not mad that like this lawyer who was involved in this big case and like, you know, made a bigger name for himself from that. It just, it didn't feel good.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good point. If there are people, activists, who are able to get followers, I mean, I would include AOC sort of as one of those, then that is good. That's the pure way and it's very rare. The vast majority of people, like you have to play to people's worst instincts to get them to pay attention to you. And that's not how it should work, but seemingly it is. And
I thought
I don't know.
Didn't have to do all of this.
Michael Avenatti?
Yeah.
No, he could have just been a lawyer. But the thing was, he was her lawyer. He started getting on TV and you like it. And it gets
you
under
like
skin.
It,
you
right.
You want to be on TV more. And I don't have that addiction because I will never be allowed near a TV. I can't even own a TV. I do own a TV. But they want more of it, and so they have to go crazier. So Ken Klippenstein, who's one of the friends of the show, he tweeted, I'm not endorsing this.
Okay,
I'm just saying it.
Retweets are not endorsements. This is just
exactly.
a verbal retweet.
That's another pointless caveat. Doesn't matter that you give it, but you give it anyway. He said, Michael Avenatti is the Democrats' Jacob Wohl. It's true, like Jacob Wohl, is way more famous than I'll ever be. Even though he has never done anything except lie to people and own himself.
Right.
And he alternates between those two things, lie, own, lie, own. That's it. But he's super famous, probably has a bunch of money, definitely drives a nicer car than me. That's how you make it. You just be awful and unapologetic.
Right.
You apologize, you're done. They will tear you down.
But that's been the blueprint, you know, since the beginning of time.
I feel like it's easier now with social media.
Okay, I'll go with that.
It's unfortunate. Anyway, again, we have very few details about this. I'm not saying he's guilty of anything except for the things that I've implied he's guilty of in terms of the personality, but not legally. Anyway, more to come. We have a couple of minutes.
Okay.
I want to just briefly mention, and then we'll do facts.
Okay, got it.
You guys have been awesome in both rating and reviewing the podcast. We're over 1,200 ratings, which is super important. Dave1362 said, I just started listening to the show. One day you had face hair, the next none. Thought someone was filling in for you. Then I heard your voice. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
I know, I came in today with longer hair.
You did.
I feel like I should acknowledge that.
You're filling in.
If you were able to get you know, face hair extensions, we would have saved us from so much drama.
It would take a while, but it's probably worth it. So another person, Fuoco Zero, said, John has been knocking out of the park so consistently, aside from the beard thing. It's been weeks, people. Move on.
People were really hurt
but
by that.
You'll like this one.
Okay.
So
I like those
Shikubu Puppy.
Well.
Says, John, I listen to your show every day and I appreciate it so much. Your perspective on things makes me feel a little less crazy in this maddeningly upside down world. P.S. I absolutely loved Brooke and JR's guest hosting of your Wednesday show. It'd be awesome if maybe the two of them had their own show together. Smiley face.
Aww. That's really nice. I love compliments.
That's really nice.
Yeah, that is really nice.
So please rate and review, and we'll post it. So we want to get facts.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because everyone knows that we struggle with like knowing each other. Mm-hmm. But we are going to win Hostmates next time around. Oh, my favorite song.
We're not.
We are.
What song?
We are. It is by a man named Party Next Door. Mm-hmm. That's his name, and it's called Break from Toronto. And he kind of like uses a piece of a Miguel song in the bit. It's a good song, and it's only like a minute and 30 seconds long.
Yeah?
That's my favorite song.
I don't know that. Maybe we can listen to it together.
Yes, do you have a favorite song?
Favorite song right now?
Is not like of all time?
Oh, of all time? I don't know. I really like some John Legend songs. Those are the ones that have stuck.
See, this is why we don't know anything about each other, because this is how we talk.
The group I've probably listened to the most over the longest period of time, is sort of embarrassing, and it tells you a lot about what I was like in high school, Boyz II Men. Definitely, Boyz II Men. They've got some good ones. Anyway, thank you for joining me. Always good to have you on. Thank you for watching. We'll be back tomorrow morning because we're contractually required to.
's for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.